Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times-Union. We love to have Casey here because he knows all the inside stuff. Welcome, Casey.
Alan, thanks for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. Cuomo wins 54-41 over Astorino. Hawkins gets 5%. What do you make of this?
Well, the kind of top note is that margin and those finishes, the polls appeared to have overestimated how Cuomo was going to do. His margins in all the polls I saw leading up to this, or at least all the public polls, were much larger, you know, above 20%. And it also would seem that those polls vastly overestimated as well how Hawkins was going to do. Some of the polls gave him, you know, 9, 10, 11%, and he ended up doing half that.
And the governor's people, by the way, I know it, knew it. I can tell you right now, they must have some very good polling in there.
You saw the governor kind of poor-mouthing how he was going to do, and when he was in Albany on Monday at his final rally at the Hibernian's Hall, he said, look, I'd be happy with 51%. And he ended up getting more than that, but not nearly as much as lots of people said he was hoping to do, which was above 60%, you know, potentially matching his father Mario's big finish.
That's right. And I see that they had his father, who I knew quite well, up on the podium with last night. He didn't look too good. I think a lot of people were concerned.
He did look quite frail. Of course, you know, it's good to simply have him out to know that he can be out in public. I mean, that's certainly better than having him at home unable to take part.
A lot of people have affection for him.
Sure.
There was a point at which Cuomo was advancing his book and said one of the things that I thought was just outrageous, which was that he's not sure that the name Cuomo actually helps him. That's ridiculous. The only reason he's there is because of the Cuomo name. It's just silliness.
Yeah, I think that's a classic case of a father-son dynamic that, while clearly it has benefited him, has also, you know, caused great difficulties. What father-son relationship isn't fraught with both good and bad?
I do remember one day during our show, The Capital Connection, that the governor and I had afterwards, I said, we can't get Andrew to do the show. A precursor of later years. And he picked up the phone and he said, can I talk to the secretary? It was when he was the secretary of HUD. And he said, can I talk to the secretary? I'll never forget that. And he gets him on the phone and he sort of lets him have it. And he says, okay, pal, or something like that, you know, bud or pal. And so what you're identifying here, that tension, is probably not all that wrong.
You didn't tape that conversation by any chance?
No, indeed.
Darn it. Speaking of somebody who has tried to get the governor on the show that I co-host, New York Now on WMHT, I can tell you
a very good show, by the way.
Thank you very much. But it is not easy to get. I think we just celebrated the 5-year anniversary of inviting him to come on and do, you know, a sit-down interview, and he hasn't done it. But he doesn't do a lot of them, so I don't feel singled out.
No. He'll do it when it's to his advantage. Believe me, he will.
You're probably right.
Because that's the way it is. So let's talk a little bit about the Working Families Party.
Yes.
Now, you know, we political wonks, we love this stuff, don't we?
So there's, it's true.
Nobody else knows about it, but we love it. So there's this Working Families Party. It's, I think, the sort of successor to the old Liberal Party, New York State. The unions are all there. The left of the party is there. And there was a big thing about whether Zephyr Teachout, who was contesting for the nomination, would get it. Instead, they gave it, because Bill de Blasio interfered at the last minute, they gave it to Cuomo. But now the Working Families Party has really ticked off.
Furious.
What's that about?
Well, as you noted, in their rather raucous convention back in, what was it, late May or early June, they ended up sort of bypassing Zephyr Teachout's bid. Essentially, Zephyr Teachout would have been the candidate of the activists, the advocates in the Working Families Party. The more organized, sort of bought in, I guess you could say, union leaders, many of them wanted to go with Cuomo and said, look, he's our guy. He is clearly going to win in November. We're going to go with him. That, of course, led to Zephyr Teachout primarying Cuomo in September. She did better than I think anybody would have expected, getting more than 30%, despite very, very low turnout.
And very little money.
And very, very little money. And the fact that back in April, if you had been mugged by Zephyr Teachout, you would not have been able to identify her to the police. And
right. As our producer, David Gustino, always reminds me, she had no TV.
Right. Yeah. Nothing at all. She was coming out with a book, which is now out. Her book, by the way, is doing much better than the governor's book. Yeah, but anyway.
The history of corruption in New York State.
Yes. But I'm derailing myself. So the Working Families Party handed its nomination to Cuomo with trepidation. The deal was that Cuomo would back and support an all-Democratic takeover of the state Senate. And I'm sure we'll get to that in a moment. And then later in the summer, the governor announced that he was going to be creating his own party, the Women's Equality Party, to sort of focus attention on his civil rights agenda for women. Now,
the Working Families Party said, this is perfidy. You are killing us. We're trying to get to be line C on the ballot.
What I have been told is that the Working Families Party were given assurances that, oh, no, don't worry. The Women's Equality Party is only going to be an appeal to independent, independent women upstate. In other words, we're not going to try and cut into the WFP's vote, which is,
Working
a lot
family.
Of it downstate and urban. And that, in fact, did not turn out to be the case. The governor and the Women's Equality Party appeal went into a lot of urban areas and really shoplifted a lot of votes from the WFP.
So let's see if I get
this
right.
They are furious with Cuomo.
The number of votes you get in the gubernatorial election determines in the next election where your position is on the ballot.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
So the Democrats got the most votes.
So they'll be row A.
Republicans got the next most. They'd be row B.
Mm-hmm.
Who's row C?
I believe it's the Conservative Party. And then I think it's the Green Party now.
Then the Green Party, and then the Working Families Party.
I think that is the case, yes.
And you need to get at least 50,000 votes in order to be on the ballot the next time.
Exactly.
So the Working Families Party is really ticked off that Cuomo cost them this position.
Yes, they are. And in fact, their state director put out a statement late, I believe just after midnight on Tuesday night, Election Day.
Blasting him.
And said that the governor, rather than concentrate his efforts on helping Democrats take the state Senate and also win congressional seats, the governor sat on his very large campaign pile of cash and created a fake party. And the Working Families Party essentially said, now we are needed more than ever as Republicans and conservative forces, take the state Senate and, of course, also do so well in D.C. So that is the statement had, as I noted on Twitter, the air of a statement that Charlie Brown would put out after Lucy Van Pelt pulls the football away from him. In other words, if the WFP did not see this coming, they are not nearly as smart as a statewide party needs to be.
Well, there are those people, okay, I'm one of them, who believe they got what they deserved. Because, in fact, had they gone with their liberal instincts, had they nominated Zephyr Teachout, they would have won have been in line C.
There is a very good, they certainly would have probably outpolled the Greens. I think that, nobody knows for sure. Alternate history, of course, being kind of a sucker's game, but I think it is absolutely certain that if they had stayed with Zephyr Teachout, they would have outperformed how they did with Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah. I think it was on Liz Benjamin's show. It may have been on yours. I was flipping through the dials, and I saw a woman from the Green Party saying, people think they're punishing Andrew Cuomo by voting for Andrew Cuomo on the Working Families Party. How are you punishing him by voting for him? Vote for us, for the Green Party.
Exactly. The Working Families Party came out, and that was their pitch. Send Andrew Cuomo a message. Vote for him, but vote for him on the Working Families Party line. And that turned out to be, who knows, without that pitch, who knows how poorly they would have done. But it did seem to be, to borrow a phrase of the governor's, a torturous, I think he said, analysis. When he was asked about whether or not he was trying to undercut the Working Families Party in a radio interview about a week ago, he said, oh, that's a torturous analysis, which is not the same as offering a counter analysis.
No, we think that he was furious with the Working Families Party for having embarrassed him when he had to grovel in order to get their nomination.
He didn't grovel too much this time around, that's for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the state Senate.
Yes.
This is so interesting. Now, you're the guest, but here's my one-line analysis. Andrew Cuomo never, ever wanted anybody but the Republicans to run the state Senate, because that way, like his papa, he could say, when people say, why aren't you getting this done? He could say, those bad guys over there are the ones, you know, who are doing it, the Republicans in the state Senate.
It's so hard to look into someone's heart, Alan. But
I have no problem.
What is for sure is that there are significant benefits to Cuomo's position as an executive from having a split legislature. He is now able to tack between being a conservative on fiscal issues, mm-hmm. where Senate Republicans will partner with him, the Senate Republicans who now have a free and clear 32-seat majority based on, you know, returns as of this point, but I don't think they're going to change. In other words, they no longer need the 5-member independent Democratic conference led by Jeff Klein to run the chamber. We don't know what's going to happen to Klein, but it's probably not going to be an increase in his power. That's for sure. And Cuomo is then able to tack leftward on socially liberal positions that he has taken with the overwhelming Democratic majority in the Assembly. But all of the big issues that Cuomo talked about, the progressive issues that he pushed so hard for in this campaign and that he mentioned in his Tuesday night victory speech, boosting the minimum wage, passing the full 10-plank women's equality agenda, passing the DREAM Act, which would expand, open up education, higher education aid to the children of undocumented workers. None of those things are going to go anywhere, or so it would seem, in a Republican-controlled state Senate. That conference has come out and said they do not support any of those things. And I think after the bruising lesson that they got handed to them after passage of the SAFE Act, I think it is highly dubious that they are going to be rushing to assist the governor in passing the more progressive elements of his agenda.
Or maybe, just like with this phony, Maloney, stupid constitutional amendment where people said that voted for an outside group to draw the lines, maybe he'll give them stuff to vote for that will mean nothing and signify nothing.
It is going to be very interesting, for example, to see his State of the State address in January and to hear more about what he wants to do, certainly in the near term, with his agenda. Is it going to be, as you say, a much more middle-of-the-road, less ambitious agenda? You have to remember that this is where Cuomo was in 2010 when he was first elected. His first year, 2011, he was faced with Republican control of the state Senate, but he was coming in with a great big mandate. Mm. And you may remember that year's session ended with a very dramatic passage of same-sex marriage, which the Republicans allowed out on the floor for a vote, even though very few of that conference's members voted for it. I think you're going to be looking for Cuomo to find things like that. In other words, how can he burnish his progressive bona fides while dealing with the lay of the land? And the lay of the land is that Republicans control the Senate.
I would argue with you, Casey, that I would make the argument, not mm-hmm. with you specifically, that if we looked at the history of Andrew Cuomo, we can see that from the very beginning, he wanted the Republicans to keep the Senate. So he campaigned in the first election on what? On he's going to have, he's going to veto any bill, that apportionment bill, that doesn't have an outside group doing the apportioning. And then after the election, he ran away from it. The only conclusion you can have.
He didn't. I would just correct you on one point. I would not say he ran away from it. I would say he traded it. He traded it for in the famous Big Ugly of 2012, where this redistricting deal was struck. He traded it for lots of things that he wanted from the legislature, including a less generous pension plan and a bunch of other bills that he might not have been able to get had he not had those poker chips, the redistricting poker chips, if you will, on his side.
Respectfully, Casey.
Yes.
Malarkey. I mean,
what a word.
The fact of the matter is that the guy knew he wanted a state Senate, a Republican state Senate, and handed it to him by insisting that the reapportionment be phony.
Having questioned your analysis, I will now back it up by noting that in the same radio interview where he talked about the attempt to tear down the WFP as being a torturous analysis, the governor also said, well, listen, you got to understand that what's at stake in this election is Washington, D.C. style conservatives, extreme conservatives, trying to come to New York City and import their brand of dysfunction. And really kind of unbidden, he said, and, you know, for example, in the state Senate, we've got moderate Republicans who we can work with, which I'm sure made the hackles on the back of the neck of Democratic Senate leader Andrea Stewart Cousins bristle, because essentially the governor was saying, yeah, go ahead and don't vote for Rob Astorino. He's an extreme conservative, almost gubernatorial opponent.
Of course he is.
But in the state Senate, those guys are okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And throughout, you can sort of see it. He said when he had to be humbled before the Working Families Party that he would get out and make sure that there was a Democratic Senate. Well, is there a Democratic Senate? No. Did he go out and really work hard? No, he did not.
Yeah, I think there will be lots of analysis. Cuomo gave money, then through the state Democratic Party, which he essentially controls, there were donations made to support Democratic candidates. But in terms of sort of putting himself out there in appearances with these candidates or kind of electioneering with them, he was a lot more subdued. There were, you know, for example, weekend events, Saturday events with Cecilia Kacik involved. Cecilia Kacik from the 46th Senate District, who ended up losing pretty resoundingly to George Amador. She won very narrowly in 2012, which was, of course, a presidential year, which brought out a lot more Democrats. So there's going to be a lot of kind of closed-door Monday morning quarterbacking on where the Senate Democrats' effort went wrong.
Well, one thing we should mention is that when the Republicans have the majority, they're going to stick together like flies on flypaper.
Yes.
Where if the Democrats had gotten the majority, you'd still have all these creeps saying, if I don't get my way, I'm going over to the Republicans, I'm going to do this and that. So the Republicans are a much more disciplined group than the Democrats.
They're a much more disciplined group. They are not riven by a lot of the kind of regional and ethnic divides that in many cases divide the Democratic Conference. The Democratic Conference is still in the process of figuring out how to be a majority conference. You will remember that in 2009 and 2002, their brief majority was snakebit by exactly the sort of internecine fighting that you're talking about. That is why Jeff Klein and the IDC broke away, and a lot of people were very sympathetic to that.
Nah, that's not why they broke away. They broke away because they were basically prostituting themselves and they wanted to get ahead. That's why I think they broke away.
Listen, I have made the IDC very angry in the last couple of weeks with my analyses of how they're going to do, so I am not going to buy into the use of the word prostituting.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I reject that.
Okay, fine. You let the record show that Casey Siler rejects it, although I bet he doesn't. And so now let's go to some of the outcomes of the election. We already talked about the phony Maloney first ballot question in which the legislature ends up being able to do what they've always done, which just so infuriates me, I can't tell you.
It would appear that voters opted for some reform over no reform.
But they had no idea what they were voting for. I mean, they come in, there's a little line that says, do you think an outside group should do it? Yeah, well, that sounds good. What did they do, take a course in politics before? Did they listen to me? Hell no. Or you? Or the position of your newspaper, the editorial position of your newspaper? Or of the New York Times or the rest of it? They didn't. They simply went in there, they read the little line, and those who voted on it did it. But good people like Blair Horner of NYPERG and others warned everybody, but it did to no avail.
But you also had good people like, you know, the good people like those at the League of Women Voters and Citizens Union who backed it, who essentially said, look, this is going to be the best chance for any kind of reform. And yes, it's not perfect in a generation. But what's, I think, for sure is that Whether it passed or didn't pass, and of course in the end it passed, this is going to be the last thing I would predict that is going to get done on redistricting between now and the next redistricting in 2022.
Whereas if Cuomo had kept his word when he ran and said, I'm not going to sign any redistricting bill unless it has a real bona fide outside group doing it, that would have taken effect right now and we would not have this terrible situation we have.
But Cuomo, and it is the second law, it's Jimmy Vielkind's second law of Cuomo. Cuomo will always take the deal, and the first, and Vielkind's first law of Cuomo is chaos is not Cuomonian. And rejecting those lines would have caused chaos and would have not been Cuomo taking the deal.
Instead, Casey, we have Dean Skelos drawing districts where he can win and has the best chance of winning. It's disgraceful. It really is. If we saw this in Europe or in another place, our State Department would say, well, we don't really think this is really furthers the cause of democracy. It's a fixed election.
You are presupposing that Dean Skelos or, his Republican inheritor is going to be in charge of the state Senate in 2022. You have to remember that we are coming into 2016, which in New York is predicted to be a
sure.
very big year for Democrats. Certainly if Hillary Clinton wins, it's going to be an humongous year for Democrats, which means that everything the Republicans do over the course of the next 2 years will be done in the expectation that they are going to end up swamped in 2016 in much the same way the Democrats found themselves swamped
this
on
time.
Tuesday.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, there's some distance between us on that, but that's okay. And now there were two other propositions. One said it was just a no-brainer.
Paperless.
We're in the digital age.
Yeah.
Let's put everything on computers. We don't need to have all the millions spent on doing all of these bills. And everybody said, fine. The third one is the one that I really have taken some great exception to. And by the way, I want to go back to something you just said.
Yep.
You said that these were good people who had supported it.
Well, Barbara Bartoletti and Dick Dady.
I'm going to leave out the good part because I think on this, they did the state a big disservice, a big disservice. And I've heard from Dick Dady, who took great exception to my characterizing him,
mm-hmm.
In the way that I did. But okay, fair enough. Again, inside baseball. Now let's go to the education ballot proposition. The governor, it seems to me, says to the school systems of the state, I'm going to put a cap on what you can spend because you need to have a tax override in order to get the money. And then everybody says, oh, Cuomo's bad on education. So he says, I'm going to come up with an education bill. It's going to cost us a fortune in interest because a ballot proposition is going to cost us a fortune in interest. And in 30 years, somebody else is governor. They'll pay it off. I think that's awful.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the rare occasions where you're making common cause with fiscal conservatives who basically make exactly the same case that this was a proposal. And we're talking about the Smart Schools Bond Act, which is $2 billion that will be bonded out for school infrastructure improvement, classroom technology, and the building of new facilities such as pre-K. It was proposed by Cuomo in the heat of the debate over pre-K, which pitted him against Bill de Blasio, New York City mayor, who, of course, essentially ran on expanding that. And the dynamic between Cuomo and de Blasio, as reflected in this election, is something we could probably devote a whole other show to.
In fact, I was just going to make the same point, which is, Casey, you got to keep coming back and back and back, because we haven't even begun to get through all the ramifications of this election. We thank you, Casey Seiler. You are the best. Casey Seiler is the state editor and Capitol Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union, and he is terrific. So thank you for being here, Casey.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.